Hello, and welcome to Elephate in the Room, Elephate's weekly podcast. Entering the room today is Jill Quick. She's a digital marketing trainer and speaker. She's the co-founder of the Coloring In Department and has trained, along with her partner, over 65,000 people in her career. In this episode, we find out which consumer product she would endorse, her experiences as an extra in a movie, and her preferred use of alternates for Jill. So sit back, relax, find some place comfortable to be, and enjoy Elephate in the Room with Derek and Jill. Hello, Jill. Welcome to the podcast. Why don't you tell everybody who you are and what you do?
So my name is Jill Quick, and I am a digital marketing trainer for the Coloring In department. So I can usually be found either coloring in or drinking gin in equal measures.
Okay. That all sounds like fun. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and get started here. Jill, other than this podcast, what is the best thing to happen to you in the last 30 days?
Something actually happened today. So I have been speaking about custom dimensions and metrics in Google Analytics, and I've been using Tom Hardy as a reference. And today I got sent a life-size cutout of Tom Hardy, and it's now sat in my office behind me, and I'm delighted. So that has been a career highlight for me now that I can say that I've brought in a blockbuster star to explain Google Analytics. So that's been pretty good. And I guess the other highlight that isn't so related to life-size cutouts of movie stars, we've just started working on our scripts for our online courses. So that's been really cool and exciting and scary all at the same time.
Oh, excellent. Now, who sent you the life-size cutout?
So Ungagged sent me the life-size cutout. So I was in Las Vegas speaking at their conference, and somebody in the audience took note and posted it to my office in London. So yeah, I'm always really pleased with it.
Oh, that's very cool. All right. I was hoping somebody sent it anonymously so I could take credit for it. But
next time. Send me gin instead.
So next question. Now, I think Jill Quick is a pretty good punk rock name. So what is the name of your fictional punk rock band?
I will go with punk rock brand, the Lemon Drizzle Cheesecake.
Lemon Drizzle Cheesecake, fronted by Jill Quick.
Yeah.
Sort of on the same note, how much did you pay Jill Scott to write a song called Quick?
Nothing. That's just a nice coincidence.
If you had to endorse a consumer product, what would it be?
Ooh, endorsing a consumer product. Probably Netflix. I've got two kids, so Netflix is pretty handy when your children decide to change their mind on what their favorite TV program is. So yeah, and the dual screen thing's a godsend because one can be watching it on telly, the other can be on the iPad, and I can get dinner done. So yeah, that's been life-changing for me.
It sounds like it, which actually, coincidentally, brings me to my next question, which is, what is your least favorite children's cartoon that you've had to endure?
Oh, it's got to be Paw Patrol. I mean, how stupid does that town mayor and that chicken have to be? It's just ridiculous that a child and his puppies come to the rescue. It drives me mad. Followed very closely by Peppa Pig.
So I have two small children myself. I have a 5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. Now, a lot of what they watch, they do listen to it in Polish. So I get to listen to it that much less. It just goes right over my head. But so far, my least favorite has been Fireman Sam.
Oh, yeah. We've not got to that yet. I've escaped Fireman Sam.
Do your best to escape that for forever, because the, let's say, subtitle of that show should be, Why Isn't Everyone Dead?
Oh, I mean, if you want a good one, there's Beat Bugs, which brings in Beatles songs, which is cool. So the kids don't realize it, but they're learning really cool songs. And there's another one called Motown something. It's like a little kid that's painting, but it's old Motown music. And I can actually catch my kids. Like, they were singing I Am the Walrus the other day. And I'm like, I'm so proud. I've kind of brainwashed you into listening to nice music.
I'll definitely check those out, because it's a matter of just obviously finding stuff that doesn't drive
the parents crazy. Yeah.
I saw you described yourself as being a little bit of a food snob, but what is your guilty pleasure food?
Oh, do you know what? It's it's always comfort food. So it's something with carbs and cheese. So it'll be something like macaroni and cheese or cheese toasty, a cheese and red onion toasty to be specific on white bread, which is not very good for you, but so tasty when you just want a bit of comfort food.
That sounds good. What sport would you compete in if you were in the Olympics?
Oh, if I was in the Olympics, if there was one for talking, then I'm pretty sure all my friends and family would say I'd win, hands down. I think if I was athletic, then, oh, I like the idea of like a high jump, because it seems a bit silly and bonkers that you can run and then stick a pole in the ground and then hoist yourself over a big H stature and land without breaking your neck. I'd kind of like to think that if I had superpowers, I'd be able to do that.
It's amazing to watch because they have to plant. It's not like you just plant that thing anywhere. And it's like in this tiny little groove and you have to get like, I don't know if I could accomplish that standing still.
No, exactly. And I'm not coordinated. So I would have said like dancing on ice kind of thing, you know, when they do like the little, like they tell a story, like the ice skating, like the duo is always lovely. I think there's a Canadian couple that look like they're in love, but they're not in love. Like they're really good, but I'm not the best coordinated person. So I would be terrible, terrible on ice.
High jump is a great answer. I like that one. If you could choose any person from history to be your imaginary friend, who would it be and why?
Oh, somebody from history to be my imaginary friend. At the moment, I think it would probably be somebody like Florence Nightingale. I've been listening to some podcasts recently about basically how social people that were being quite pioneering in the social sector. And I like that Florence Nightingale just understood customer empathy in terms of noticing people got really sick after the war, and it was more about the environment and how you could change it, and that changed hospitals forever and ever. And I think that, and that she's a woman as well, and people didn't really listen to women back then. So I think I'd probably have Florence Nightingale.
That sounds great. I don't know as I mean, I know a bit about her, but it's been a long time since I've heard anything. So which podcast was she mentioned on?
I think it was a TEDx one.
Uh-huh, okay.
Like the TED radio hours. I really like listening to them.
And our final question from our icebreakers, what is the best piece of professional advice you have ever received?
The best piece of professional advice was on, and I wish I could remember the name of the company, but when I was about 22, one of my first jobs, we had these little cards that came in the post. And there was a statement on it that said, a grapefruit is a lemon that saw an opportunity and seized it. And I've always remembered that quote of just go for it. Like, don't be the lemon, be the grapefruit. Just go out and seize it. Just give it a go. So yeah, I don't know who sent it to me. And I really, really should have remembered, but that piece of that little nugget, that little phrase has stuck with me for a very long time.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. That's a good one. You hear lemons and you think you're going to get the kind of typical thing, but that's nice. So we're going to move on here to talk about what you do. I'd like to talk a little bit about here the Coloring In department, which is, I believe, a company owned by you, correct?
Yes. So I'm the co-founder along with Aidan Carroll. And we do a mix of corporate training. So we'll go into businesses and we do skills assessments and then build training programs and go in and deliver them. And then at the same time, we are working on building online training courses, starting with Google Analytics. And then we'll work our way through all of the very, very many marketing channels that there are.
And how did that get started?
Me and Aidan have been in the same training circles for years, and we kind of knew of each other, but never physically met. And then about 3.5-4 years ago, when I was about to go on maternity leave with my daughter, I handed over my workshops to Aidan to look after whilst I was away, with the intention that I was coming back. So that was the first time I physically met him, handed over all my work. And then when we came back, we got on really well and we started teaching a 1-week accelerator together. So this was a digital marketing course that ran over 6 days. And then we started drinking and hanging out and chatting about marketing. And it was, I just really got on with him. And then I had an idea to do a different education company, because I think that education can be fun. It doesn't have to be boring. I think it can be affordable. I don't think it should be for people with deep pockets. And I was complaining that I don't get any staff parties, because I was working for myself as a consultant. He was doing the same. So I was like, why don't we do our own like staff party? So we went to the Dorchester on Park Lane and had an afternoon tea and drank far too much champagne. And I said, I've got this idea for something called the Colouring In Department. Do you fancy doing it with me? And he said, yes. So we spent a good year talking through the business model and what it would look like and how we would do it. And then we slowly phased out our old lives and started this new chapter.
That sounds great. Combining forces.
Yeah.
You could have a holiday party.
Exactly.
I could not think of a single reason better to start a company.
Oh, it's so much better with a co-founder. Like, if I think if I was on my own, I would have gone crazy by now. Like, having somebody to work with and bounce ideas off, talk you off a ledge when you need to, because it's a bit stressful, you know, creating a new company and going out there on your own. And we've got complementary and non-competing skill sets. So together we work really well.
And that's important to find that partner who can help with the places where you need the help.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where you're both strong, so you can present that as the best part of your company. Congratulations with that. And how long has that been going on?
We've just completed our first year. So October, we celebrated 12 months officially creating the company.
Very nice. And what's been your biggest success of the first year?
I'd say the biggest success is, I think, a mix of completing some projects with some clients where we've seen them through like an introduction to digital marketing all the way through like quite a detailed progress, and actually seeing the staff members that we've trained put it into practice and send you emails to go, look, we did the thing that you said and we've made loads of improvements. We're making more money, we're making more revenue, we're being more efficient. That's a really warm, squishy part of the job that I really love. It's the whole, you get the teacher buzz for that. And I think the next bit was probably the templates that we've been creating. So we've got loads of resources that we've ungated. They're all free. They're a bit mad. They're a bit pop arty. They're not going to be to everybody's tastes. Slightly sweary, slightly bold. And they've taken a lot of work, but I've been really proud of that work that we've done. And we've had some really good feedback on it. So that's been nice.
Well, great. So good luck with that. And congratulations on completing the first successful year.
Thanks.
And we're going to move on now to our second round, which is a nice game of Have You Ever.
Okay.
Now, of course, you can play the drinking game at home if you would like. But I'll just be having some coffee over here. Our first question. Have you ever tried out to be an extra in a movie?
I have been an extra in a movie.
Aha. Well, let's hear a little bit more about that.
So it's may not be as glamorous as it is. When I was 11 years old, my high school, so I was in the first year of high school, we were selected to be in a film called Funny Bones that I don't think did very well, but it was set up in Blackpool. So we all got 2 weeks off school and we all got to sit and be an extra. We were all the audience. And it was really annoying because I didn't realize how boring filming is. You know, you've got the same take like a million times at different angles. And because we were extras, they gave me, I think it was like an ice cream or something, and I ate it. And then when they came around to the next set, they're like, you know, you need to eat another ice cream. We're going to have consistency here. You can't have audience members like with their props not being right. So I was like, oh, okay. So and fake laughing as well. Like, it was hilarious at first, and they recorded all of us doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could see by the end of the week because our faces hurt, and it wasn't as fun as we thought it was. But it's a good experience. It's my one claim to fame that I've been on film. I'm technically a star.
And did you watch this movie after it came out so you could see yourself?
No, we weren't allowed. It was like a 16 or something like that. So we didn't even get to see it. And I don't even think you could find it now. So
who was in this movie? Who was the star?
This is where the memory is. It was a long, long time ago. So there was a comedian and I've forgotten his name. He was in... Oh God, I'm going to forget his name now. I'll have to Google it later. He's a British comedian with like relatively large ears. That's probably not the best way to describe somebody. But yeah, I'll have to come back to you on that one.
Okay, we'll figure that one out later. Have you ever cut someone in line?
Yeah. And I'm British. We're not meant to do that. But yeah, I've to be fair, it is on public transport though. When I have to get home or I'm in a meeting, I have strategically placed myself in a way so I can cut in and get on that train or on that tube before somebody else.
Okay. Yep. I think when it comes to public transportation, rules or
if it's anything else, then I will wait my line, and like, you know, the rage inside of me when the line that I could have chosen goes faster than me and I just have to stand there and just like wait it out.
That's the worst.
It's always annoying. I know.
Have you ever eaten from someone else's plate when they weren't looking?
No, that would just be really rude. No, I'd always ask. I'd always say like, could I try a bite? I'd never like take some.
You've never done the, hey, look over there and eat something?
Unless I did it when I was a kid. My kids do it all the time. Like, I'll like leave the table and like the best part of my meal is gone, like the Yorkshire pudding or something, and the kids have got it all around their faces, and I'm like, did you eat mummy's Yorkshire pudding? They'll be like, no. I'm like, you so did. So they do it all the time. So but yeah, as a formal grown-up, no, I'll be polite.
Okay. Have you ever snuck into a club?
Yeah. I was 16 in 1998, so we were like at sixth form going out in clubs pretending we were 18. And we'd kind of sneak in, and there were a couple of like indie clubs that I went to that one of us would pay to get in. And then there was, we found like a back door where the staff used to go and smoke, and we'd like sneak ourselves in. So yeah, a bit naughty, but you know, we're skint students, so you know, needs must.
Of course, got to do what you got to do. Have you ever fallen asleep in one location and woken up in a different location?
Absolutely. And not my proudest moments, but I've done it. Normally when there's been one too many gins involved, I've fallen asleep on a train and ended up in a train depot and the lights were off and I was stuck on a train and I had to ring the British Transport Police telephone number to say, hi, I'm on a train and the lights are off and I can't get out. And I'm stuck. Somebody had to come and get me and I got told off big time for that. Yeah, I've always stayed awake or got an Uber or a taxi home because it's just not worth waking up in a depot. Yeah.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah, I know. Youth. I'll blame it all on my youth.
Yeah, sure. Have you ever liked the movie better than the book?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Can you think of an example where you liked the movie better?
I read The Help and I enjoyed watching The Help with Emma Stone, is it? I really like her as an actress. I think she's done some good stuff. There have been some others where I've really loved the book. You know, when you like, you fall in love with the characters so much and you miss them when you finish the book that I can't bring myself to watch the film in case it doesn't live up to the book.
I haven't seen that one. I'm a lazy movie watcher. Yeah, that's all right. Have you ever sent your food back to the chef?
Yeah, and that's a hard, again, like classic British norms. We're not meant to do that. I have when it's been like cold or frozen. I've had like one bad meal in the last year where food was brought to the table and it was hot on the outside, but freezing cold in the middle. So yeah, I don't like food poisoning. So I sent that back. But I think that was justified. If ever it's not quite right, I will finish the meal. And then when they come over and go, is everything okay? I'll be like, mm-hmm, yeah, it's wonderful. Thanks. And I'll tip and I'll walk away. But if it's not cooked, then yeah, no, I was going back.
Yeah, you gotta draw the line somewhere. I'm not a big send food back or complain about little things.
Yeah, I used to work in hotels. Like people might sneeze or spit in your food or something. I've always been nervous about that. So I will, unless there's something seriously wrong with it. You just put up with it.
Yeah. And our final question for have you ever been on TV or radio?
Only if you count like local radio stations when you used to call in for like, you know, winning tickets to like the local theme park or something like that and you try and get through. Apart from that, like, no.
Did you win any tickets to anything?
Yeah, I won tickets to the Blackpool Pleasure Beach, which is where I grew up. So it was fun going on the Big Dipper and the Big One.
Not sure what that is. It all sounds vaguely dirty.
They're all rides. I think, isn't it? No, they're all roller coasters. They're all roller coasters. No, I can see how that can come across quite badly. Roller coasters.
So the next thing I'd like to talk a bit about here is your public speaking. I see that you do quite a few events during the year, but I'd also like to compare that to your training sessions. So you do both of these things here. Do you have to prepare for them radically differently? Do they feel like an extension of one another? Do you have a preference, one or the other? What can you tell us about that?
It's funny with the speaking, it's, and I'm sure other speakers feel the same way. When I'm on stage and the adrenaline kicks in, I'm fine. And I know my subject area and I feel okay when I'm on stage. But everything from you've been accepted to speak to the run-up of actually getting on the stage, my heart rate will spike. I won't sleep for a few days before the talk. I get really nervous. It's daunting to get up on a stage, whether it's 10 people or 1,000 people. I always get just as nervous. I don't feel that way when I'm doing training, though. But I think that's because it's a smaller room. I know the company, or I'm getting to know the company. So when I'm doing talks, you know, they're either 30 minutes or I think 55 minutes is the longest session that I've done. So the longer talks, you can go into a little bit more detail, show case studies, be a bit more relevant. Shorter ones are just like a light touch. Whereas when we're doing training, one thing that we like to do is really get into the nuts and bolts. So if I'm doing a Google Analytics course with a client, I'll audit their analytics account. So the deck and the material, it's all bespoke to them. Because I used to hate it when I went to training sessions. And I remember the first few that I did, I was in a charity and they'd be like, this is what like Adidas did or Nike. And I'm like, that's fabulous. But what if you're a small B2B company with no budget? Can you give me an example for that? I don't want a consumer example. I want something I can relate to. So we try and make the sessions more relatable, but obviously there's more work that goes into that prep time. But then you feel like you're almost an extension of the company in a way. And that's nice because they're giving you that trust element to go in and look under the hood, so to speak, and show them this is what it is. This is what you could do. And we're not an agency, so we don't do the work. We'll like shifty them along to either their own agencies or other people that we know to actually be better at their job. I think it's, they're both different, both have their challenges. I'd miss either of them if they disappeared. So
which did you start doing first?
Training first. Yeah. And if I look back to my career, I've always done either workshops for my staff or doing training sessions for charities or committees that I volunteered on, which I guess kind of then bleeds into speaking. So starting off talking to a group of people about a particular topic and then going off to actually standing up at an event and talking about a particular topic, that came a couple of years later.
And is this something that you foresee that you will continue to do? Is this more of a short-term thing or?
No, I think I'm in the education sector for good, I think. It's weird how life turns out, I think, that I've always thought I've always done marketing. So I'm 36. I've been learning about marketing since I was 14, doing my GCSEs. I did it as A-level. I did marketing as my degree. I've done 2 postgrads. All my working life, I have been in marketing. And I always thought in my early career that I'd want to be the managing director or marketing director of a company. And it turns out I'm actually a lot better at being a trainer and I get much more joy out of it than I don't think I could ever work for anybody now. I think I'd have to work for myself. And it sounds really cheesy, but I'm genuinely passionate about education. And I think there's a gap in the market for the style of education that we're doing because it's very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, it's just very old fashioned. The way that you get assessed, can you do something? Can you show that you understand something? It's failed in my opinion. I think it should be more around learning principles and how confident you feel about a particular topic instead of, can you answer these multiple choice questions? Can you write an essay? Great, you now can say you can do this particular subject. I think that education needs to change, and I'm going to make it my career to do that.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much for that. That sounds like a lot of fun. And it's always nice when you can have that passion behind it. That's basically one of the reasons why I stopped teaching. I didn't have a passion for teaching. Like, I enjoyed it, but I feel like that's a career that you have to love to be great at.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're going to move right on now to our third and final round, the Elephate Lightning Round. I'm going to give you 2 choices. If you would like to expand on one of those, you may. If not, we'll move on to the next one.
Okay.
Question number one. Now, I see that you said you were a fan of gin.
Mm-hmm.
So the King of Soho or Langley's?
Ooh, now that is and it depends. So King of Soho is quite a wintry gin. So at the moment I've got Monkey 47 on my shelf. So I'd probably go with, King of Soho, just because it's wintry and that's a nice wintry gin.
Okay. Do you prefer a Bramble or a Southside?
Ooh, a Bramble.
Caught red-handed or have a green thumb?
Have a green thumb.
Quick on the draw or cut to the quick?
Cut to the quick.
Once in a blue moon or tickled pink?
Tickled pink.
All right. Now, this goes to your alma mater. These are both famous alumni.
Okay.
Chris Urbanowicz, or if he's actually Polish, Urbanowicz, or Jim Davies?
Jim Davies.
Give color to something or with flying colors?
Give color to something.
Well done or rare?
Rare.
A female ferret or an off-color euphemism?
An off-colored euphemism.
Cinema or living room?
Probably cinema.
Oils or watercolors?
Watercolors.
And our final question in the LFA lightning round: dragon or unicorn?
Ooh, that is a hard one. I'm gonna go with dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Over unicorn. Yeah, dragon.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for that. That was, we kind of flew through that one a little bit.
Good though. That was a good question.
Thank you. So do you have any final thoughts or anything that you would like to promote?
If you are interested in some candid, down-to-earth, pop-arty free templates, then head over to thecoloringindepartment.com. We've got loads on there and we're building out more every week and every month. And apart from that, I'm just going to carry on pitching and speaking and training people. So yeah.
All right. Terrific. Thank you so very much for joining us and taking a little bit of time out of your day to talk. We do appreciate it. Jill Quick, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Derek.
You have been listening to Elephate in the Room, hosted by Derek Caraview, produced by Christian A. Dumay. Music by Giant Monsters on the Horizon. This podcast is a part of Elephate, the 2018 European Search Awards winner for Best Small SEO Agency. Follow Elephate on Twitter at Elephate SEO and on Facebook at Elephate. Thanks for joining us and see you next time.